Welcome, everybody, to another edition of Irish Illustrated Insider. I'm Tim Priester with Tim O'Malley, joined by Pete Sampson of The Athletic. And I feel like we have talked the daylights out of recapping the blue gold game in the end of spring, in addition to the scrimmage that we saw on Saturday, April 13th, but not quite. A little bit more here to talk about. We'll try to add to what we've already commented on in our instant analysis and our overtime recording from a post-blue goal game, but 28-21 in favor of the blue team. I thought it was good, guys. It had ended with the offense scoring 7 touchdowns. If it had been a defensive-dominated spring game, I think, and there's already enough wringing of hands about the offensive tackles in the offensive line, but I thought it was good that the offense showed some life, especially the April 13th scrimmage went to the defense overall. I don't know what your guys' thoughts were on that.
It was fun because, as we talked about a month and a half ago when this all started, the four quarterbacks or the three quarterbacks can play. They can all throw the ball well. They all threw the ball well. You didn't even notice, because they threw the ball well, that Pete Sampson pointed out there's going to be only 4 scholarship receivers out there. I don't think I really would have known that had he not pointed that out. It felt like there was more guys playing out there that could play, catch the ball. They didn't have their number one running back, their number one tight end, or their number one quarterback out there. And there were 7 touchdowns on offense. So that's what you want to see, because the defense is vanilla. The defense should not win in the blue goal game like they have in the past. They are standing there in 2 coverages, 3 coverages without blitzing. There's a reason the defensive line had 7 sacks and no linebacker had a sack. It's just a different world that they play in. And it was good to see the offense do well in one of these games.
I am not so sure the number one running back sat out the game, Tim.
Well, that's possible.
Because, I mean, I love his sort of like elite explosive ability, but I'm not sure I've always thought of him as like, okay, this is an all-around college running back. And some of the stuff that he did on Saturday, it was like Chris Tyree's quickness combined with like the ability to break tackles. You know, he sheds Adon Shuler on his 2nd carry of the game. I don't know if he broke 4 or 5 or 6 tackles on that 38-yard reception, but I mean, watching back the game, something that really hit home with me was I was on the 21-yard touchdown from Angeli to Reardon. Love is not only stays in a block, he blocks Josh Burnham one-on-one. It wasn't like an outside linebacker, and he held him up just fine. So for Love to do more all around stuff to go with like the burst that he's always had, that really stood out to me as like, this was a good player anyway, but a good player who is now more than that. So Jeremiah Love was somebody that really jumped out to me.
Well, you combine the broken tackle on the 32-yard reception with what he did the previous Saturday and running over Adon Shuler running the football. And now you start saying, okay, this guy's, first of all, he's stronger than he was last fall. So that's real positive. I'm not sure that I'm ready to go there quite yet, Pete, as far as a pure running back. I still think Jadarian Price is the number one pure running back, but it's what Love can do from the slot in the passing game. Mike Denbrock is going to, you know, I'm really bad at making these kind of predictions about numbers, but he caught 8 passes last year. He will easily triple that this year. Denbrock's going to get him the football. You know,
he'll go over 6.5 yards at A&M if I make that bet. You think that's going to work out?
I think this time that one would work. But remember, Tim, when I said to you that's a Denbrock play where the running back is already going downhill when he catches the pass. I don't think their timing is quite there yet, but he is. I say this a lot of times. You got a number in your mind. He was wearing a different number on Saturday. So he is a Ricky Waters type running back. Now, Waters rushed for 10,000 yards in the NFL, caught almost 5,000 yards in passes.
So it's a good type, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's a type. I'm not saying he's going to be that good, but I concur with you there, Pete, as far as where he's headed. I still think, like, pure running back, who you want to hand the ball to, pad level between the tackles, that Price is the guy that you want to get the majority of touches. But it doesn't matter. As long as you find ways to get the ball to Jeremiah Love, good things are going to happen. And it's going to happen whether it's in the running game or in the passing game.
I think if one of them doesn't get hurt, we're not going to see 1,400 yards challenging Audric Estime and Reggie Brooks. You're going to see.
No, you know, I don't.
It's going to be it's going to be the Diggs Estime thing from 2020. What year am I on? 2022. Only more of a successful team.
But I didn't include the question here, but somebody made a comment about Jabron Payne looking a lot quicker. Tim, you agreed with that.
Yeah, I thought it live and watching it back. So when I saw the question, it jogged that. I thought going through the hole on that 15-yard run, 11-yard run, he just looked like he was scooting more. I always felt like Jabron Payne fills roles for Dylan McCullough because he's reliable. He has low pad levels, so he beat out Audric Estime for the short yardage role. Audric Estime kind of took that away in November. He blocks better than Jadarian Price and Jeremiah Love did last year. So he filled the third and long role because he blocks better than those guys. I thought he looked like a good running back. Now he can't fumble. It's kind of like when Steve Angeli throws a bad pick six, as one of our colleagues told us, he can't do that because he doesn't have the arm strength of the other guys and the ability. Jabron Payne can't go out and fumble. He's going to continue to have a role, but I do think the role is still a supporting role.
Yeah, and Aeneas Williams looked good, and we have a question in a second segment, so I don't want to walk all over that. But Aeneas Williams looks pretty good. He's a quality back. I know you liked him, Tim, during the recruiting process, and you know when Marcus Freeman says he's made improvements as a pass blocker, we all know that's going to be the key in order to get additional playing time. I do want to say this about Angeli. And that's why we look at the film and, view it and get a different perspective of it. Because I think I probably gave him maybe a little too much credit post-game. I thought he was the most inconsistent of the quarterbacks. I know Minshew was intercepted and could have been intercepted a second time, but I just thought he was kind of lazy in some of his throws.
You mean not you gave him too much flack or too much credit?
No, I gave him too much. I know I gave him too much credit post.
Okay.
I thought that there were, especially like the first series, he's kind of, he's going against the wind. A couple of the passes fell short. He had a sloppy, screen pass to Jeremiah Love that fell short. Remember, Love caught it for a 1 yard gain. And that was, again, going against the wind. That's not an excuse. And yet, he finished the day. He was still 17 for 25, 228 yards and two touchdowns and was not intercepted. The touchdown pass, they brought Chris Mitchell in after the game, and I get it, but the walk-on DB fell down. He scored a touchdown.
He fell for the stop and go, man. It's a stop and go.
No doubt. It was a great move. No, it was a really good route. It was a veteran. It was the route of a 100-catch, college wide receiver. But again, you add the quarterbacks up and 44 for 67, 516 yards. It goes back, Pete, to our first practice when you said, when you came out and said, all right, all of the quarterbacks look competent. And then, of course, didn't count Riley Leonard. I thought it was interesting that Marcus Freeman said, had this been a real game, it would have been hard to keep Riley Leonard off the field. So,
yeah, it just sounds good.
I think. When we talked to Leonard, he was like, I don't have
run. It's hard to run. He couldn't jog 2 weeks ago. It makes it so seem so hard he can run.
All right. So Marcus Freeman made that up. Pete, yeah.
That's what I think. I like Marcus.
He probably more up. In the he just said it to say it. Because I think it's Riley Leonard, for how much, how many times have we written the word mental reps in our careers? And we're just like, all right, mental reps, roll of the eyes. But I think Riley Leonard actually took mental reps that mattered. He actually probably got better doing what he was doing back there. And there was one play where I think Minshew ended up scrambling. And if you watch it from the end zone, Leonard has thrown the ball. It's like he found the guy open that Minshew couldn't find. Obviously, it's a little bit easier 15 yards behind the line of scrimmage. But I feel not that Leonard didn't miss out on anything. He missed out on a lot, but I would like to think that he at least got something significant out of the spring where, once training camp starts, that he can jump back in with the ones and win the job. Because I fully expect that to happen in short order in August.
When we talked to him a couple of weeks ago, he says, I don't have any pain. I don't, I don't feel like, and so I think that's the whole point that, and he was really champing at the bit, you know, to get out there.
Those guys were playing well in front of him
No doubt. You know, when I look at the questions there, I think most of our questions are about the offense. So why don't we, as we go through this first segment, move into the second segment. Some of the guys on the defensive side of the ball that you were impressed with, Jason Onyeka is, man, oh man, does that physically, that looks like a big time defensive lineman, man. And he showed a little bit of it Saturday.
Hey, he's not your starter. That's why it's big time.
Yeah.
That's
not even your first guy off the bench.
It's a big deal that if he can play like that. The defense, I thought Burnham played well. Oben played well. Bryce Young is always going to play well in snippets until he plays well as a full-time player. It's KVA is going to be tough to keep off the field if he understands everything that's happening. Like we're told that Veliamuasa understands everything and is ahead of the game. When that becomes reality, like when we're told that from someone on the record in August, he's going to be hard to keep off the field. I don't like Jaden Osbury having to run 18 yards with the receiver. I don't think it's a recipe for success when you play a good team, but he's doing it. So who am I to say? I like Jaden Osbury a lot. I just don't like 225-pound linebackers being your reserve nickel. I don't think that's great, but he's going to be hard to keep off the field. Sneed belongs on the field. Tim, I saw what you wrote. I want to give Drake Bowen not a pass. It's probably in the hardest spot. The new guy in the middle that has to worry about some other things going on around him. And if Kaiser's not out there, like Kaiser will be next to him when they need him to do stuff. But I agree that those other linebackers just looked, in our viewings, they looked more sure of themselves, more explosive. But I don't know if, I just don't think Al Golden's going to keep putting him out there with the ones if he doesn't think he's a guy that belongs out there. So I kind of, it's not a pass, but it's a, hey, we didn't see everything pass.
Yeah. I think that's fine. And I mean, really Kaiser can play that, you know, is it Kaiser and Sneed or is it Bowen and Kaiser? Cause Kaiser's playing different positions in either of those. Osbury, when he talked down Greathouse, like 20 yards down the field, I had to like check the roster to see who number four was. Cause it was like, they have a safety number four. Oh no, it's Jaden Osbury. And then KVA did something similar in the deep middle.
Yeah,
I was like, holy crap, how do you get that deep from a middle linebacker? So those guys impressed me. Bryce Young, I thought, was a good teammate on Kenny Minchie's touchdown run, because if that was a actual game, he would have destroyed him. Instead, he just like, oh, you can just have it. Bryce Young, you sort of see everything that you want. As I don't know if he's, you know, is he your third team defensive end going into summer? Like, is he going to be your third team defensive end in September?
Burnham's good, man. You know, they're all pretty good there.
It's a good group. So, I don't know if there's anybody else like in the secondary. I'm not sure anybody off the top of my head did anything where I was like, okay, that looks better or that looks different. I know Luke Talich made an interception, but I think on the TD to Micah Gilbert at the end, he was late. But I don't know if the corner took the wrong position or what. But I think the secondary has got, you know, some development there. I don't know if there's anybody that I was like, wow, this guy did what KVA or Bryce Young or Jason Onyeka. I don't know who that guy in the secondary is.
Yeah, you know, Tim, with regard to Osbury, I hear you. I mean, he's listed at 6'2", 220. He's probably closer to 225. I think he can run with any tight end that he lines up.
Yeah, no, he talked about it. I just, you know, we're looking at
smaller. It's the smaller slot receivers that you start to worry a little bit about. And you know, I mean, I don't. Well, Pete, you mentioned out KVA on the where he broke up the pass down the middle to Greathouse. That was a great play because he had to sprint, turned one way, and then had to turn his body around the other way and made the pass break. Yep. It's like, my God, how in the world can that freshman linebacker do that right now? But I think maybe we're probably giving too much thought to first team, second team. Yep. That'll shake itself out. There's just a bunch of good players there. And Bowen, he had seven tackles. I mean, he's around the football. He's physical. I don't know that he jumps out at you maybe as readily as some of those other guys do. And so I don't know how to respond to it. Like I went over to yesterday, I went over to the baseball game and talked to Sean Stifler, the baseball coach. And as we were walking off the field, he said, "How'd Bowen do?" And I said, "You know, he did a good job. I don't know anything that necessarily jumped out, but there's still progress that he needs to make." Of course, Bowen spends time with the baseball team. I really should have asked him. I really haven't asked him about just how legitimate of a baseball candidate he is moving forward. I was driving home, I thought I should have asked him that, but it's a good group, man. I mean, they got a bunch of good players, plenty to choose from. We hardly saw Jordan Clark. I really wanted to see him, but I think we all exit the spring. I personally, after watching his film from Arizona State, I'm like, my God, this guy can't even play. Well, he couldn't play because he was hurt. But he can play, and he's a good athlete, and he's light on his feet. And we don't know whether we can put him in the same category as the two previous nickels.
At least you're thinking about it.
But yeah, I think he's going to be a pretty good football player. Kahanu Kia reminded me of his little brother who I just had watched film on recently, who verbally committed. They're both really light on their feet, really aggressive, find their way around the football. And those are all good things. And there isn't room for Kia and Zinter to be playing next year, but those guys are pretty good as deep backups.
There is on special teams. They can really.
Well, there's no doubt about that. Yeah. That's exactly where they'll have to find their footing early on. We've got other questions. We've got offense, defense to talk about. Why don't we go ahead and wrap up segment one with that? Tim, you got one more thing?
I do. I want to put it out there because this is the ultimate nitpick. This is the opposite of worrying about offensive tackles and not having receivers from last year and all that. We all love Christian Gray. We all like Jaden Mickey as a backup or potential, long part-time starter. I actually noticed that Cam Hart was not out there. Opposite. Who also, Benjamin Morrison was not out there either.
Yeah,
Morrison, Cam Hart drop-off could be more than people think. Cam Hart was a dominant other corner last year, and I think that helped a lot. This is a nitpick. The corners are going to be fine. We're going to rate them in the top three or four position groups, whatever we want to do. Sometimes top three or four is not the same as those were the best players on the field last year. Because I thought they were awesome.
If you saw Cam Hart in the combine, that is not a concern.
This is a nitpick about this end of the spring.
Well, it's concerned from the standpoint that you're not going to be as great at it.
Yes, then that's a concern.
Him in the combine, we're talking about the best receivers in the country now, or at least the upperclassmen, and he was just blanketing them in the combine.
He was really good, man. I just noticed, I was watching, like, man, Colsey's having a good day. That could not have possibly happened if Cam Hart was out there trying. That is kind of where I'm going.
I want to throw this out because Tim, you said linebackers weren't blitzing. Look at the routes of the receivers. It was a lot of stop routes, catch the ball, find a spot in the seam of the zone and catch the ball and turn around and try to get a couple yards, gain of eight, So, there was a conservative nature on both sides of the football.
I did have 3 months to make that point, but I felt it needed to be made right there.
I agree with it. I agree. Pete, last thought on segment one?
No, it looks like a very good roster to me. I mean, I don't come out of spring. Well, not yet. I do come out of spring feeling like the starters are probably just as good as I thought they were going to be. The backups are better. I think there's more depth than maybe what I would have thought when spring started. So that was sort of the big picture takeaway for me.
Imagine if the offensive tackles had played well, there wouldn't be anything to bitch about going into.
But they both came back.
But they didn't. And so there's still something.
They're true juniors. They could have come back, for crying out loud.
Since 40% of our questions on the board were about offensive tackle, we will address that in segment two coming up, Burning Up the Boards.
Welcome back to segment two, Burning Up the Boards. Our first question is from Joseph H611. I keep hearing great things about the progress of Jalen Snead this spring, but I keep seeing a player who, to me, has a very difficult time shedding blocks and very often over-pursuing or running himself out of plays. Do you think this is a fair assessment, or am I off base?
I didn't I mean, obviously this opinion is based upon Saturday. I didn't get that opinion. I think more than anything, what I saw was him getting caught up in traffic. But I think that's a good thing from the perspective of, if you can't make a play, just try to blow up the play the best that you can. And I frequently saw, you know, he was wearing green shoes on Saturday. So you could, when there was a pile of bodies, you could spot that he was in it. So I kept thinking, well, man, he's sticking his nose in there and everything. He had 7 tackles, 2 of them unassisted. He had half a tackle for a loss. He had a pass broken up. I mean, I didn't really see him over pursuing a whole lot. You can't make every play. And if you can't make a play, do something that allows your teammates to make a play. That was my perception. But I obviously missed some plays maybe that Joseph H611 saw.
I think Snead will still has some road to travel in terms of understanding, you know, where to be at all times. However, usually he's going to be out there with Jack Kaiser, who can just tell him where to be at all times. So I think that the concerns are valid. I also think that once the season rolls around, he essentially will have a coach a yard away from him to tell him what to do if he doesn't know. So you need some more growth there, but we'll have a boost to get that done once the season gets here.
I want to give Snead credit because it seems like he made more growth from March 7th to mid-April than he did in the first 2 years. So he could make that growth again from end of April to end of August.
And again, you have plenty of competition there that he doesn't have to be out there for every snap. You've got Osbury that provides you with flexibility of the will and the rover and even the nickel. So, yeah, I mean, I think the point is Jalen Snead made significant strides this spring. And so you tend to cling to that line of thinking. But of course, he hasn't completely arrived. He still has 3 years of eligibility to go and some growth in the process. I put a couple questions together here. One from Maverick 20. Who do you think starts at the two offensive tackle spots in College Station? And from Any Davis 2, will Billy Shrouth get a look at tackle? Which was, I don't think anybody's really considered that. That was something I just threw out a long time ago, that how do you get your best players on the field?
Go ahead, Pete.
Yeah, I don't see Billy Shrouth at tackle at all. And I think the starting offensive tackles will probably be Baker and Jagasaw in College Station. I don't know if the starting tackles will be Baker and Jagasaw all season, though. I didn't really hyper-focus on Emil Wagner. Thought he was fine on Saturday.
A lot of Burnham matchups,
I think.
I thought he did some good things. I don't think that I emphasized them enough in my tail of the tape, but, you know, how much can you actually write in a morning?
What was burned into my brain from Saturday was there was a snap. I can't even remember who the quarterback was, probably Angeli. But Baker got beat off the snap by walk-on Kobe.
Oh yeah.
Good one. Uweke. That I have a hard time not thinking about all offseason going into College Station, because it's we talk about how, like, okay, Chris Mitchell's 62-yard touchdown, Isaiah Dunn falls down, he's a walk-on. Don't read too much into it. If you're getting beat by a walk-on, it's different. I just don't know if Tosh Baker can move quickly enough at the point of attack to be a tackle. I feel like this offensive line is going to be a lot like the 2021 offensive line, where they move guys around in season, that they need games to get it worked out. That is a dangerous game to play, but I just don't think that they have an alternative right now.
I don't have alternatives or names for you, but when it says, who do you think starts at both OT spots in College Station, I'm going to go with the field instead of Baker and Jackson.
But who are the, I mean, those are your,
just somebody else.
I know, but those are two of your most highly recruited players on the entire team. And again, I wrote about it today. Is Sullivan Absher? Look, first of all, well, Pete, as you say about Baker, I mean, the last play of the first half, Jagasaw's in a 2-point stance, Oben is at the starting gate ready to fire off. He knows what's coming, and he gets totally defeated off the edge. I don't know.
Is the cool word to use these days, I'm told. So he got
cooked. You know, Jagasaw probably, if he's going to play tackle, he probably needs to play right tackle in order to maximize it. But then who plays left tackle? Wagner seems to be the most athletic, but when they were preparing for the Sun Bowl, Wagner didn't get, he wasn't competing for the left tackle spot. He was competing for the right tackle spot. Sullivan Absher is an answer. I think it's too early with him. Gerby Lambert, we have no idea.
I saw him walking outside the stadium after the game. He was very impressive walking down the sidewalk.
Did he look athletic walking down
the sidewalk? Yeah. I saw him about 80 yards away, and I was like, who is that? Like, I thought it was a prospect. I was like, oh, it's Gerby Lambert. Yeah, he's pretty good looking.
You know, it'll cause consternation throughout the whole summer, and the sky will be falling because of those positions. But I get it, because if not those two great prospects, man, it's a little hard to see. The only reason I mean, this was months ago. I don't expect Billy Shrout to get a shot at tackle, but when, you know, before there was spring practice, it's like, okay, what can you consider? What I like about Shrout is he plays a wide game. He plays with a wide base, and I think that he is a guy that's difficult to beat to his right and left, in addition to straight on. But he's not a tackle, and that's not in the card. So, this will be something that will be a topic of conversation throughout every podcast between now and, you know, whenever the start of the season. Question from KevKev561. I thought one of the more glaring takeaways from the blue gold game was the vastly improved quickness of Jabron Payne. Yet I don't believe it was commented on. I actually didn't think that I included this question, but I did. And it's a good one. What was your assessment of his play?
I mean, I think he looked quicker. I hated him on third and 10. I did not like the third and 10 draws to Jabron Payne because he wasn't capable of getting 10 yards last year. There was a time at Clemson where he had to beat one guy. And I just thought if you gave that to Jadarian Price or Jeremiah Love, he would have beaten that guy. Yeah. Or Andre Kestame, for crying out loud. He was on the team too. So I think Jabron Payne needs that because he will win a role that is important. So it's good that if he can do some more stuff.
It's good. Look, it's good to have a talented third running back. And Jabron Payne is a talented third running back. I think that's great.
It's good to have a bunch of positions where the argument is, you know, will this third team guy beat out this second team guy? And which goes to your point, Pete, about the depth of this. You know, JB, John Bryce has talked about that. And sometimes I feel like since I've been covering Notre Dame for 100 years, it's like, you know, you get a little bit kind of jaded about how many, you know, who's good and who isn't and how many there are. There's a lot of good football players on this team, man. There are a lot of good football players, and the depth is at a level that has rarely been seen. I don't want to throw hyperbole into this, but, you know, a depth that is rarely, rarely seen at Notre Dame. Difficult to keep that kind of depth, especially now with the transfer portal, which of course we had questions about this, about, hey, any movement in the portal?
There will be.
I mean, things aren't happening and we're sitting on the information. It's just that it hasn't happened yet, but there is a ton of talent, and most of our arguments, with the exception of tackle, I guess, you know, it's good players versus good players. Not that those guys aren't good players. They just haven't proven it yet, but there's a ton of talent here, man. It's a good situation to have these kind of debates.
On that same topic, need to turnover. Really liked Neas Williams' vision in the spring game with his reported ability to pick up blitzes and versatility catching the ball. And with his theoretical ceiling, how much of Jabron Payne's role do you think is cut into? Not that much.
Yeah, I mean, you know, again, going back to the good competition, but what I like about Neas Williams is, he doesn't go down on first contact. He's got great lower body strength. He's built low to the ground. He has very good balance. You know, even when he was running into holes that weren't there, so to speak, he was battling and fighting and scratching to get a gain of one when maybe it should have been minus one. he looked like that's, you know, that's the first real opportunity we've had to see him play live. And he's, you know, he's hard to bring down. It's lower body strength. Remember we talked about that, him and Kedren Young. Kedren, you know, he got banged up with his quad and they didn't want to risk that anymore. But those are two guys with, I'm sure they have quality upper body strength, but I think with those two guys, it starts with the lower body strength.
It's almost the same thing I said to the last question. It's okay to have good fourth team running back.
Yeah.
And I think that's where Aeneas Williams is for now. That is totally fine. I think he looks like he will be a good college player for Notre Dame. They just don't need him to be a good college player right now. And that's great.
He's probably ahead of Kyren Williams, same stage as the early enrollee, where Williams had to reshape his body, and Aeneas Williams doesn't have to reshape his body. Kyren Williams got in the spring game and made a guy miss in the phone booth, and he looked like a tubby little guy making a guy miss in the phone booth. You don't think that with Aeneas Williams. He looks like he's a, what is it, rocked up unit? Is that what Charlie said?
That was Charlie said, yeah. I look here now, and I don't see any questions on CJ Carr. I don't know that I avoided any, but you know, remember when we came out of the April 13th scrimmage and you know, it's like, oh, well, he's going against third team. And we were the only ones that saw it. The crowd and fans didn't see it. And now they had an opportunity to do that this past Saturday. See what we mean? You see what we mean? I mean, the dude drops dimes. You've got KK Smith falling down onto his back near the goal line pylon, and damned if he doesn't drop it right in there to him, and KK can't hold on to it because the ball gets dislodged as he hits the ground, or the touchdown pass between Mickey Brown and Luke Telich. The dude is special. Again, we're not predicting second team or third team. I don't know, but you can't help but say he throws the football differently than most quarterbacks.
I want to lead Pete into another question before he has to go, but I want Pete's take on this. I wrote about this in Monday Musings today. Why is quarterback the only position where our subscribers and Notre Dame fans are mad that the young guy is getting better than the new guy? You should recruit over every player on your roster. Why are we so sad that the young guy might be the best finally in a position? It's the most important position. If the defensive tackle that was number four was 10 times better than the other ones, not 10 times better. That's not accurate. If we talked about the fourth string defensive tackle, like, this guy is special. This guy has to be on the field at some point. He is going to be amazing. People will be like, get him on the field right now. With quarterback, it's like, well, I mean, what about the other guys? Why don't you like the other guys more? It's just like, it's a good thing that the freshman's really good.
Yeah. I mean, can we not see a situation where he's number two? I mean, come on.
Would the world end if that happens?
I can't see him being number one.
I hope Deuce Knight's better than CJ Carr. I hope the guy that replaces Deuce Knight is better than Deuce Knight.
Yeah, it is. Quarterback is weird like that. But yeah, I think CJ Carr is excellent. I think Kenny Minichie is a good player who is stuck in a really bad situation all of a sudden. And like this is different, but what I like Drake Bowen, but I really like Kingston Viliamaasa.
Yeah.
So like, are we stuck in this? In that sentence, I don't know if anyone is worried about how Drake Bowen feels about Kingston Viliamaasa, whereas with quarterbacks, it's like,
of course,
this house of feelings that everyone gets up into. I don't get it.
I thought as the day wore on, Kenny Minchie got better. He is the one of those three guys that has the feet to do some things that, you know, not that Angeli and Carr are immobile, but they don't run it quite as well as Minchie. And that is an additional asset on his talent card.
Minchie is faster than he looks. You don't say that all the time. Minchie's faster than he looks. He just goes by people.
Hey, Tim, there are plenty of guys that are like, there are plenty of guys that are clamoring for Carr to.
Yes, but it's like, I'm just offended. Well, what about these guys? What if they transfer? Then they do what the people have done for 50 years. They transfer. You either start or you transfer. It's fine. Everything's going to be fine. Now, if Deuce Knight is a lot better than CJ Carr, that will be an interesting situation.
Because, yeah, well, I can't even imagine what that would look like.
I don't know what that would look like in year month three of your life at Notre Dame. But all right, last question for Pete. Andrew Gilm 41, Jordan Faison is clearly an amazing lacrosse player. Wow, this seems like a faint praise here. But honestly, did it hurt his chances of being the starting slot receiver by playing lacrosse and mostly skipping spring?
Absolutely not. If you were at Notre Dame practice a couple Saturdays ago, in talking to Mike Denbrock. Mike Denbrock knows exactly what they have in Jordan Faison. And by him not participating Saturday or, you know, throughout most of the live stuff in the spring, he knows what he has there. He's not going to get excluded from the equation. No offensive coordinator is going to allow a player that dangerous to just fall by the wayside because he didn't get to see him throughout the spring. He knows what he has there, but it is a crowded house, man. There's no doubt. As we look at, when we talk about top six receivers that Mike Brown talks about, I find it right at this moment almost impossible just to reduce it to six, because you say, what about that guy? What about that guy? Pete?
Hurt is the wrong word. I would just say, like, it gives Great House a chance to, like, maybe carve that out. And if Great House carves that out, but, like, Mitchell is like, okay, this guy's a big time player on the field. And then you got Bo Collins and Deion Colsey and Micah Gilbert at the bottom. There's only so many reps to go around. But I don't think Faison is somebody that you were going to play 60 snaps anyway. Right. Like, I think he's still going to have a significant role, including on punt return, that I don't know if playing lacrosse and essentially being a starter on the number one team in the country is hurting anything with football.
But in Great House, Jaden Harrison, a window, Tim, was that fair?
No, I forgot about Jaden
Harrison got a window because of it. Yes, maybe that's fair.
But Denbrock's going to bump Great House out the boundary. Denbrock's going to put Faison to the field side occasionally. I think that there's a rotation by position. It's just mainly those two guys. You know, I mean, Jaden Thomas, I guess, could be a slot too, but that's Harrison. They've got a really good situation going there. And I think that you can be creative if you can create multiple positions for a couple guys, at least those two, it helps alleviate some of the issues about reps. But, you know, again, this is depth, man. They got depth. They've got choice. Yeah.
Both. Like, we're changing the answer always from being both to all of the above, because yes, they have more than two. Both doesn't capture it.
That's anymore. What, like, you came away feeling good about the receivers Saturday, and the following receivers didn't play: Jaden Harrison, Jordan Faison, Cam Williams, Jaden Thomas, Bo Collins, and Logan Saldate. And you still like the receivers on Saturday.
Yeah. Good place to be. All of the above.
Speaking of all the above, play like a champ 7. Trivia question. Who replaced Keon Keeley last cycle? Answer, Boubacar Traore. How do we feel about that now? Oh, we lost Pete on that one? He was supposed to yell both before he had to go.
Oh, Pete's out for the rest of the way. Taking me the rest of the way. But I'm not really sure exactly what the intention of the question is. I'd still like Keon Keeley to be at Notre Dame. Just because he's had a hard time with the Alabama depth chart doesn't mean that he wouldn't have a better shot with Notre Dame's depth chart. But Boubacar Traore is looking really, really good. Both, though, is the right answer, Tim.
You know why it's the right answer? Because Keon Keeley was not replaced by Boubacar Traore. He was replaced by Junior Tui Halamaka, because he is one of the competing Vipers. Who would you rather have?
Yeah, that's...
why it's always both and all.
Yeah, imagine... Well, Traore probably wouldn't be at the
level. Yeah, whatever. Bring them all on. All.
You know, I mean, I still think, again, it's like you talk about RJ Oban. I still want to see exactly how good is Boubacar Traore against the run. We know that he can rush the passer. Remember that one, Tim, during the game, it was like, Oban versus Jagasaw, and it was that's not right. Who was it against?
They were both lined up, and we're like, ooh, it's 3rd and 10. Right. We better watch these guys.
He said, I'll watch the interior. I said, okay, I'll watch the two outside guys as best you can. And boom, both offensive tackles immediately were beaten.
Because they both won. It's like, yeah, so the interior. This is just.
Yeah. Again, we get back to the offensive line and some of those concerns. But Traore is trending. There's no doubt about that. We saw it open. Can do if he does that to a Jagas. You know what? We keep saying, you know, we're pronouncing his name wrong. It's Jagasa. That's like the fourth pronunciation we've had on his name. But were you there when he clarified?
Yeah, it's Jag. I remember the word jog. I do remember that.
It's Jagasa. So We'll try to get to that.
We got Adam Eola right. Remember, his dad told us that we were wrong for 4 years. That was incredible.
I've been saying Traore, and it's Traore.
I should point out for the Adam Eolas, a family member told us that we were doing it right, and then the dad told us we were doing it wrong.
Yeah.
That's a mea culpa. That's not our fault. That's just bad news right there. I guess the pronunciation key is down at the bottom. I could probably look at that too. I'm sure Alan Wazlewski is thinking that as he listens to this. I'm sure it was down there properly, but I did not look at it. So
it is always there. But Jagasa is the correct pronunciation, and so is Traore.
Let's go back to the offensive line. Kali 1-2-3. In watching the game, Emil Wagner seemed to have played better than the other tackles. He also seems to move much better laterally. If he can get to 300 pounds by fall camp, what are the chances he lands at left tackle with Jagasa ending up at right tackle?
I don't know, because like I said, he had a chance to win the left tackle job for the Sun Bowl and he didn't. Now, of course, we're going to be,
down 4 months
further. How much does he need to gain? I 300. I don't know that 300 pounds is realistic if he was playing at 281 this spring. Did he clarify?
He said he was 292. He said he was 290, 292. Okay, that was the beginning of spring. It's hard to gain it, though, during spring. So I don't think he went above that. Because
probably not. And now's the time to do that. But, it's like, do you give up 25 pounds from Baker to him or 20 pounds from Baker to him for the sake of pass protection? Probably. But you don't want it to hurt your... your run blocking either. Is there concern with Baker and Jagasa as run blockers?
I don't think so.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think that there really is, but it's two different skills.
That are pass a lot though.
That's what makes the job so damn difficult. The two skills are so.
Therein lies the rub. They're going to throw 35 times.
That's why left tackles make the big money, because you're asked to do two completely different skills, and they're difficult enough individually, let alone being able to do both. So
remember when we asked Harry Hestand about we heard it's harder to pass protect for a whole game than run block, because Fisher had to pass protect for 70 times his first game back.
Yeah. And
Harry's like, I don't know about that. I don't think that's true.
Argument. Remember the argument that I had from somebody that that pass blocking takes greater exertion than run blocking?
I think it might take more athletic ability, but I don't think it takes.
To consistently go man on man with a 300 pounder trying to push him off the point. I just think that that's a little bit more difficult. Pass blocking for 70 snaps like Fisher had to do against Oklahoma State had to be very, very tiring. I get that point. But anyway, This all came out of the Keeley Traore conversation, and that was from the Emil Wagner question. And we're just going to have to see. I mean, I just there are no more practices to watch. We can only speculate between now and then. We've already kind of painted the picture with Kirby Lambert and those possibilities. Probably right that more like 2021, where it's going to be a little bit more trial and error.
I agree. I have one thought on this for listeners. Last summer, they tried a lot of pieces when they were trying to find their guards, including Wagner. But I don't know if Baker ever got tried there. But they had Wagner, Coogan, Schroff, Spindler, and Craig, because Zeke Carell is starting already. You will see multiple combinations in the first 10 days. We are in August training camp.
Yeah, and Joe Rudolph is that kind of coach, especially. Yeah. I got another pronunciation for you, Tim.
Rudolph is correct. I know that for a fact, but
it's Schrouth, not Schroth, like Shroud.
When did that change? They're changing names as they're doing these things.
I'm just telling you. It's like Shroud.
Well, Irish Gold, who I think I got right. It's early, however, but with this freshman class, what true freshman do you envision playing in the rotation on offense or defense? Related. Do you think KVA, pronounced KVA, might start at Mike over Bowen?
He could start at Mike over Bowen, but again, that'll be a good competition. KVA definitely is in the running. Um,
You'll also see those combinations at linebacker by Al Golden and Max Bulla. I did not call him Chuck. It's pronounced Max because that's his name.
Don't take offense, Tim. I'm just trying for us to get this right. As spring is over, as we go into the summer and we start pronouncing these names, I want to make sure that we're in mid-season form, mid-summer form with them. You know, Micah Gilbert, again, this is where it gets difficult. If you're going to play six receivers, Micah Gilbert probably gets left out.
You got to play seven. You play more receivers with Denbrock. They only had three receivers last year. How many times are they going to play six? We were in a brave new world, Tim, where there's a bunch of guys out there.
Then Mike Brown's going to have to take that up with Mike Denbrock. Yeah. Or Mike Denbrock's going to have to take that up with Mike Brown. Yeah, I don't know. But what other freshmen?
They've done such a good job. See, start is the wrong word. We shouldn't use start. Like, who will play a role where you think that freshman played a role? Because Traore did not play a role last year. He made a great play. But he didn't play a role. That was when you saw him make that sack, you had to look down and say, oh my gosh, that was Boubacar Traore.
It should be difficult for a freshman to crack a lineup on this team.
I think Bryce Young will play for Notre Dame.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, Aeneas Williams is going to play. As soon as there's an injury, Aeneas Williams pops into the game day rotation where he's involved in the game.
Three guys ahead of him right now.
Yeah, but somebody gets hurt. One of those three guys gets hurt, or he gets hurt. One of the five running backs gets hurt. It just depends on who gets hurt, because that's the nature of the position. I would probably lean Bryce Young carving out time.
I would agree. You never have too many pass rushers.
There seems to be a role. You know, there's a role you could find. And
you know, if one quarterback leaves and one quarterback then gets hurt, that CJ Carr is right in the mix. But again, on a team like this, with this kind of depth, you shouldn't have too much freshman contribution. And that's not a bad thing in this instance. But
people were pretty sick of the freshman wide receivers playing last year that could have been juniors and seniors had they been better.
Yeah. Yeah, we like Cole Mullins, but I don't think that he's ready to play a significant role. He's got to get a lot bigger, obviously. I think we've pretty much hit the usual suspects there. Question from Insane ND Tucson. Sean Cebolano Jr. has had some bad weight, needs to reshape his body, but he looked very quick and active yesterday. Will he be a mainstay in goal line situations this season?
Sean Cebolano Jr., phonetically. That was a good job, Tim. It is just Cebolano. You don't have to put any accent on there. You know, we all like Sean Cebolano for a guy that needs to. We shouldn't say needs to lose weight. He has to change his body.
Okay, the way I put it was he has to get to the weight that allows him to have the stamina to play.
Right.
Whatever that weight is.
Whatever that weight is, yes. I
have no idea what that weight is.
You know, I always thought they should use Kanaya in goal line situations. They did a little.
Kiana, I know you mean.
Yes, that's why I said it. I was just trying to get you on that one. You know, the reason I don't think they will is because I would like to have Howard Cross, Riley Mills, and Jason Onye, and maybe Gabriel Rubio on my goal line. Yeah, but well, in the future, they will have Sean Cebolano on their goal line.
Yeah, you know, Rubio will be there if he's back, and things are certainly trending in that direction. This guy,
Onye maybe should be in there, huh?
him too. And I'm trying to find my story that I wrote on Cebolano because he clarified how many tackles for loss that he had. He had like 78 and a career or something stupid. But I mean, if you saw his high school film, and then you saw what he did to Joe Otting on Saturday, you would say, okay, I mean, I get it. This guy is unbelievably quick for his size. He
really is.
But just get to the point where your stamina is not a question. Whatever weight that is, I don't know what that, he was listed 330 or 333. That obviously is a little bit too much. He fully admits that. If he can be 320 when camp opens, that would be a huge win.
He looks better every time he's lined up to play football than he does in stretching and running out of the tunnel. And that is a good thing.
No, I would agree. I would agree. He's a player. And I just, you know, sometimes I guess like, okay, I'm going to interview Sevillano. I'm going to do the story on Sevillano. So I have that moment in time to get to know him a little bit better. And you have somebody else that you're talking to that you get to know a little bit better. And then we don't get to talk to him again for a while. But I loved everything about the kid, his spirituality, his presence in the world that he lives in, his responsibility to himself and his family, all those things that in many instances are cultural, which I love about his culture.
Quiet transcription too. Quiet transcription, if you must know. It was not an easy. Yep.
Yep. I think he's going to be a good football player. It was why, like, he was one of my kind of pick the clicks coming out of the signing, because I just thought that he's a special talent. And as usual, when you're coming out of signing, you're overestimating them, because the next time you see them, they're playing with a bunch of guys that are older, and you know, right, it's harder for them to move up. He's going to be a good football player for Notre Dame. I'm convinced of that.
Final question from Denver Maximus. Which players quietly had a great spring that few people are talking about?
Cooper Flanagan. I mean, I would hesitate to say great, but guys that had productive springs, I would say Cooper Flanagan, although I didn't think he had a very good Saturday. I didn't think he had a very good blue goal game, just breaking the game down. I didn't see him in every play. He had a drop. I thought he missed a couple blocks. I didn't think that was one of his better days, but that would be a guy that I think has quietly had a really, really good spring, and they like him a lot, and he has a very good future at Notre Dame too, at a position where Notre Dame always has somebody good.
It's tough because we talk about a lot of people and everybody likes young players, so I'm trying to move it around. Ashton Craig had a good spring. Donovan Heinisch had a good spring.
I think Donovan Heinisch is an underrated football player amongst the media, but very highly regarded within the coaching staff.
Don Shuler had a good spring. I feel like we talked about him though, because there's a lot of talk. Well, he looks like a player too, Don Shuler. He's in fantastic shape. He looks like Jalen Snead out there. They both look like they're in fantastic football shape. We just talk about so many guys. Christian Gray had a really good spring. We talk about him plenty though.
Hey, you know who made a couple of really good plays Saturday, and we've never mentioned him as a guy we've seen make a play? Devin Houston.
Yes, he did. He had that sack of Kia shared it.
Yeah, the big hit by Kia, which everybody, oh, look at the hit by Kia. Devin Houston actually made penetration there first. And then it's in my tail of tape today. There was another play right. Oh, I know. He pressured Carr on the near interception by Christian Gray. So that is really, really promising to see a couple live plays by Devin Houston. I think he was kind of banged up last year or whatever, wasn't quite ready. And that was a guy that flashed, at least in that moment, to me.
If you didn't listen to our first 50 minutes of this podcast, Deon Colsey had the best spring of anybody that we don't talk about, because Deon Colsey had a good spring. And as you pointed out, we never say that.
He did. We had a question from someone that said he watched the blue goal game and he thought Brendan Vernon had a good day. I don't know that I quite saw it that way.
I am sticking with my pre-spring thing for Vernon, that he came in last spring, had to lose a ton of weight. He got himself in fantastic shape, but they realized that he probably would never be quick enough at strong side defensive end. So they asked him to gain some weight to be quick enough at defensive tackle. And he is growing into that body.
Now he's not big enough yet.
We'll analyze his new body frame and his ability to use it in August.
Yeah. I mean, I thought he got blocked. The few times, you know, like, we can't see every player on every snap, but the few times I saw him, I thought he got blocked. So my perspective is different than the person, I'm sorry, I don't know who, remember who it was that asked the question, you know, about him. There appeared to be some argument about who had a good spring in maybe some other outlets with regard to Cole Mullins and Brendan Vernon. I thought that every time I saw a snap of Cole Mullins, he was finding his way to burrow his way in between offensive linemen. This guy is 244 pounds playing on the interior. When I see something like that, it catches your attention. That here's a guy that's no toughness, despite not even being close to the type of size that you need to play defensive tackle.
I think one good way to look at this is we went in with expectations for Vernon and zero for Mullins.
Mm-hmm.
And Mullins kept flashing, and so you remember that. I think sometimes coaches don't do that. I don't think. I think they just grade you. And I'm grading Mullins as I didn't think I would notice Cole Mullins the entire early enrollee spring.
Well, I would agree. I mean, I'd like to think that we do that too. I don't care who the hell it is that flashes. If you flash, you flash.
Yeah, but I was surprised by Cole Mullins. If Vernon flashed, I would not have been surprised.
I wasn't even sure. I mean, he missed his whole senior season, right? I wasn't even sure we were going to see him.
Yeah, he didn't. He was
from practice one. He was off and running. So, I don't know. I know expectations, and so maybe you have an eye on guys like that, but Irish Illustrated, we try to look at like a blank slate. If you flash, you flash. If you don't, we're going to say you didn't.
Yeah. I think Deion Colsey's a good point for that too. I didn't come in thinking I'd talk about Deion Colsey there in the spring.
Yeah, definitely not.
Certainly did.
Definitely not. You know who we haven't, have we said the name Eli Raridan? Because man, a healthy Eli Raridan.
I feel like he just knocked rust off in that game. Like he's way better than that.
You know what? He had a couple drops and they were both low throws. So
he went down on a tackle
He's 6'7". You know, he probably needs to work on low throws as he goes into the summer because it's a little bit harder for him. But you can certainly see what a matchup problem a beast like that is. Don Shuler, you know, Don Shuler had a pass breakup, but Raridan kept it alive and made it a completion instead. But you know, Mitchell Evans, we don't know whether he'll be back for the start of the season. But I don't think that we'll truly know how good Eli Raridan can be probably until 2025 when he's the main man. Mitchell Evans probably moves on to the NFL at that point, but
he will not be a guy, that is quiet, that is not talked about in August. He'll be talked about. No matter what, Eli Raridan will have a lot of press.
He is so impressive in a football uniform before he's even taken a snap. He's just one of those unique type athletes that when that's the first guy off the bus.
Yes, that's a good one.
Right? No doubt about it. Who haven't we talked about this spring, Tim? Devin Ford looked like a running back on his 13-yard run around the edge.
That's a great teammate. Devin Ford's a great teammate.
Yeah, he really is.
Almost as good as Xavier Watts, by the way, who is the best teammate, because most of the time the guys that stick around from multiple positions don't become Bronco Nagurski winners. That's why he's my favorite type of teammate.
It will be an incredible story. We did have a question about who, which of course I didn't use here, who's going to be a first-round draft choice? Not counting Benjamin Morrison and Xavier Watts. I don't necessarily know that. I don't necessarily know that Watts is a first round draft choice, but let's see. Let's see how the 2024 season transpires before we make a decision on that. I'm heading out to the Nordin Club in Minneapolis later this week. I'm really excited about that. I've never set foot on Minneapolis soil. I've set foot on Minneapolis, flooring in the I was trying to think
in the airport. Is that what you're saying?
Airport. I've been in the airport multiple times, but I have never set foot on Minneapolis soil. Looking forward to that. My cousin lives there. I tried to go last year, but a few things intervened and wasn't able to do that. So looking forward to that. In the meantime, you and Drew Mentak will be on the draft, which begins. Yep.
Thursday
night. And one thing we're certain of is that Joe Alt is a first round draft choice. And I would be shocked if he got past the number 7 pick by the Titans.
He should have just come back and we wouldn't have all these conversations about offensive tackles. That'd have been good.
Okay. We are not going to have a podcast on Thursday. We'll come back next week. A week from today is our plan, right, Jack? Is it not? No?
Sure. I think so. Yeah. We got to talk about the draft.
We have to talk about the draft. We'll be back on Monday and next week. Thanks. Thanks for joining us. Tim Priester, Tim O'Malley, Pete Sampson, and Jack Freeman. This has been Irish Illustrated Insider.